Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke. This is the November 24th, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Oh, I hope everyone is enjoying their long Thanksgiving Day holiday weekend and isn't too stuffed from Thursday's feast and all the leftovers that have followed since. I also hope you're getting plenty of holiday shopping done, and it is in that spirit of all of us working on our Christmas wish lists that we are basing today's Space Talk program on. My guess is that the vast majority of our listeners today are either running around shopping and may only be able to catch a few minutes of the program, or you may be so overdosed on turkey and tryptophan that you're just lying on the couch and are so sleepy that if we got into an in-depth discussion today about space policy or orbital mechanics, it just might put you to sleep. So we're going to keep things light here today, focus our conversation on helping you find that perfect space-related gift for yourself or the space cadet in your life. This is the Space Coast, after all. For the next hour, we'll share what we think are some of the best space movies, space books, TV shows, toys, model rockets, who knows what else, all of which might be a welcome addition under your Christmas tree. And when I say we, I mean it's not just my opinion you're going to have to put up with today. Also in the studio today, my good friend, returning voice to this program, Patrick McCarthy, who, as you know, by day is director of spaceport operations at Space Florida, but the rest of the time, a nationally respected, award-winning model rocketeer, a fellow graduate of Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, and believe it or not, a Florida native. Welcome back, Pat.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
Glad to have you here. Okay, so we're just going to chat here for the remainder of the hour about our favorite books, our favorite movies, our favorite toys, our space memories, our Christmas memories, and hang out and just let folks know. By the way, as we do continue along with the program, you are all out there in radio land invited to tell us what space-related gifts you might like for Christmas this year. Any other thoughts about our space program that's on your mind today? As always, give us a call, 321-768-1240, or send us an email to the address spacetalking@AOL.com. Hey, later in the program, we'll also update you on the next launch situation. And we also have some interesting comments from some folks in the industry about what they're thankful for this year and what they want under their Christmas tree. So, Pat, Christmas memories. When both of us are in the same situation where when growing up, you know, we were inspired not only by what we were seeing on our TVs, but by what we got to play with as kids. What were some of your favorite space-related toys that you remember?
One that really brings back great memories was the G.I. Joe astronaut and space capsule.
Yeah.
Because it had that, the G.I. Joe had the great silver spacesuit and a real helmet with the swinging visor on the top. And the capsule was great. Looked like a Mercury capsule. And
at least from one end of
from
it.
From one
right?
side, anyway. For the basic shape.
Right.
I mean, you had the giant sliding glass door or whatever to get
right,
in and out.
Right.
But you needed room to get your astronaut in there. Well, that would also float in the tub or in the pool.
I never tried that.
Yes. And of course, we often had a lot of splashdowns, which probably explains why my the capsule's okay because it was mostly plastic. But I have no idea what happened to my G.I. Joe. I think he
Your
got
G.I.
soggy
Joe.
And worn out.
And the sticker on the cockpit panel probably
no,
worn
still,
out.
Actually, that part is still
really?
There, yes.
Yeah. I remember I went through one capsule myself, and then my neighbor had a capsule, which I coveted because I broke – I don't know if I broke it or dropped it or what happened, but that clear plastic cover that the hatch that you could slide back and forth broke right away for me, and I don't know if I just was wrestling with to get the G.I. Joe in or out, but I broke that. He had one that was not broke, and I always coveted it so bad, and both my capsules, and eventually gave it to me, but both my capsules long gone, and I had to wind up buying one on eBay when that got to be a big deal.
I probably ought to put mine on eBay because it's still tucked away in the back room somewhere.
Do you have the record still that came with it? The little, what was it, the little 45 RPM record, The Flight of Alan Shepard?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've got that, and I have a couple other old records from, like, Walter Cronkite with the Apollo 11.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that came in the National Geographic on the Apollo 11.
The Walter Cronkite one, that's a great gift. CBS Man on the Moon, little 33 and a third RPM, little small record. That one was sold. Here's a Minnesota story. That one was sold every year after the moon landing, after it came out, at the WCCO radio booth at the Minnesota State Fair. So for several years there, when you went to the CCO radio booth, you could meet the celebrity radio personalities. You could get a drink of real spring water. Real spring water, mind you.
Spring, which, what, because it's in the spring or whatever?
Well, they were in plastic things, but it was like bottled water. It was like this new thing or something, you know, and you get the little plastic things.
It was just melted snow.
I'm sure it was melted snow. Yeah, State Fair in August. It would have just melted
a few weeks
before.
The glacier would have just retreated, and you could have chipped away a piece of fresh spring water.
That's right. And then you could buy this record. And I remember my parents buying me one, and I probably went through several copies. When I was, when I was in third grade, this tells you how far back as a space cadet and as a guy who's always wanted to share the story of space exploration. When I was in third grade, for my science fair project, we did this science fair display, and it was called The Moon, We Did It. And I didn't really understand the phraseology, but Dad said it sounded cool, and so we cut out the letters, and I put some of my models, my Saturn V model and my Apollo Command Service Module model that you can see through, and a few other things, and some postcards from the visitor complex, uh-huh. You know, laid all that out. But that wasn't enough for me. I had to borrow a record player from the media library, you know, the media center, not the library. Of course, by then it was the media center. And we played the Walter Cronkite record constantly. So as you walk by, it was very Disney-ish. You know, you got the whole display, the sights, the sounds of the space program.
Including the part where Walter Cronkite was speechless.
Absolutely. And it just, you know, it just, to me, to this day, you got to have background music. And everything you do, you got to have background music. It goes back to that that deal. My favorite toy, did you ever do Major Matt Mason?
I recall having a couple of them, but I never got a full collection.
Never a full collection. We had Major Matt Mason. That was a big deal for me. There was a book series, the Peterson Man in Space book series. Do you ever remember those?
Yes, I used to have a couple of those.
I had those. And one of them in the introduction, they were talking about the 1960s and how Major Matt Mason was this great space toy from Mattel that was supposed to introduce kids to the fun and exploration of the space program and parents to the high cost of space.
Maybe that's why I didn't have that many of them.
Didn't have too many. Major Matt Mason, they were four astronaut figures, about 6 inches high, maybe something like that, maybe a little less, rubber, but with little wires in them. Major Matt Mason had the white suit. He was painted in white. And Sergeant Storm was in the red suit, and Doug Davis was in the yellow suit. And then for a time in the 1960s, the African-American astronaut was a man named Jeff Long, and he was in the blue suit. So you had these four astronauts, and you had all their accessories. You had the moon station. You had the little rovers that you could drive in, the little time bubble or whatever it was. You could launch missiles and satellites and crawl around and explore the moon. And it was this great set of toys that were so cool that, in fact, Tom Hanks is making a movie now about Major Matt Mason. And I don't know, last I heard it was maybe next year, but it's in production and it's been confirmed and greenlighted. And we
don't know who it's starring yet.
I don't think we've heard any of those details about it. I just see all those toys coming back on my shelf someday soon. So, well, anyway, okay, so Major Matt Mason, G.I. Joe astronaut, some great toys from the past. We're going to keep talking about, well, some books, movies, TV shows, some stuff that we can actually, you can buy now for the space cadet in your life as we continue to talk about the holidays here on Space Talk. I'm Jim Bankey. This is Space Talk on WMMB. We'll be right back.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And indeed, welcome back to Space Talk, everybody. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to participate in the program today. You can also send your questions or comments in an email to spacetalking@AOL.com. My friend Pat McCarthy from Space Florida in the studio with us today, talking about our favorite space memories and Christmas stuff and movies, books, films, whatever. We'll get into some of that in a minute. When we were preparing for this program for this holiday weekend, a lighter edition, I did send out an email to a bunch of folks asking them in the space community, asking them what they might be thankful for here on this Thanksgiving Day weekend and maybe what they wanted for Christmas. The ground rule on that last part was that they couldn't ask for peace on earth and goodwill toward men. I wanted hard material items here to put under the tree. And so we got a few responses. Let me share a few of them with you. Robert Perlman, our friend who manages the Collect Space website and is probably one of the nation's premier space collectors of space stuff, said, of course, he was thankful for being able to follow Discovery, Atlantis, Endeavor, and Enterprise to their various new locations this year, and he had a great time doing that. He said, but in terms of what he wanted for Christmas, he says that the Cocoa Beach Company called Sea Spray Glass Blasting produced the black granite engraved plaques that mark the final stop of each of the orbiters at KSC's shuttle landing facility. They are now producing replicas of Discovery's, Endeavor's, and Atlantis's mile markers that are on the runway right now in both full scale and smaller sizes. And he'd love to have a set of the three to add to his shuttle collection. I just popped online before the program to their company website and see a story about it, but couldn't find a specific reference as to how do you acquire those or how much they are. But that's a great idea. What do you think about that?
That'd be great. You can put it in your walkway around the backyard or your garden or something. Or if you have your own runway, you can put them on the side of the runway.
If you have your own 3-mile runway, feel free to add that. Marshall Hurd responded to my email. Marshall's one of the great, I guess we call them the gray beards, the wise old men, certainly one of the space wise men of the holiday season.
That's for sure.
That is so well respected in our industry. He says, for thankful, this is actually kind of nice. He says, I'm truly impressed and thankful for the corporate memory and knowledge the people in this community possess relative to the entire panoply.
I don't know.
Panoply of space-related subjects ranging from memories of programs to technologies to political views and policies. Where else can you find a comparable set of people and intellectual properties with no more than 2 phone calls or emails we can deliver a world-class expert on any facet of space? Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? Absolutely. What does he want to find under the tree for Christmas? Any book, he says, preferably not in electronic format. a wise man from another generation, right? He says, Eisenhower was asked what was required of an officer to be his aide, and he said, send me someone who is a reader. So Marshall would like books. Mike Curry from Public Affairs at KSC, he said he got his present at Atlantis, all wrapped up at the KSC Visitor Complex. Bill Moore, who heads up Delaware North, that runs the Visitor Complex for NASA, absolutely agreed that the shuttle Atlantis was great. He says that a healthy granddaughter next spring would be an ideal present.
That
was very nice, very nice. Marcia Smith, one of the great policy experts of our nation, follows everything from Washington and a woman I greatly admire and respect. She says this is easy for her. She wants Legos. Oh, isn't that cool? She says, I've admired all the space-related things I've seen constructed with Legos for the past many years. But the Lego version of Felix Baumgartner's Skydive really put me over the top, definitely on my Dear Santa list. So I don't know, do you take the little Lego model of the thing and throw it as high up as you can? And
Maybe you, or you just attach it to a balloon and let it
drop.
Let it jump off. Yeah.
Emily Perry from the Air Force Space Museum, a recent Colcom Award winner, just thankful for all of the workers she's working with, her team, her volunteers, which are great. She says she could use a couple of $100,000 to restore some more historic rockets and missiles.
Well, that would be great. There are a lot. I've been in one or two of the hangars where some of those artifacts are stored, and a few of them could use some work. The majority of them look really good.
Yeah,
the ones that are tucked away.
They're already restored.
Yes.
You know, the Air Force has this rule now that once you restore something like that, a missile that's been out in the open like we have here at our missile guard, rocket guards, can't be displayed again outdoors. And so that's why as these rockets and missiles get refurbished, they're winding up inside Hangar R. So our big task as part of my work that I do with the Air Force Space and Missile Museum Foundation is to find the money to put together the facilities that allow the public to see these restored missiles, because right now they're basically hidden.
Right now it's only folks that are badged to be on base that can get in to see those. Right.
So a couple $100,000 would be great, Emily. And she says you could always wrap the dollar bills. Cheryl Hurst, who heads up external relations out of KSC, wants a model of the International Space Station with a Dragon, a Dream Chaser, and a Boeing CST-100 model attached.
Very nice.
Very nice. Wouldn't it be nice if they all got their money and could all fly up there at the same time? And former astronaut Mike McCauley, our good friend, says he is thankful for the really cool Lego space shuttle that his wife Jane, graduate of Melbourne High School right across the street, got for him. He said he needed lots of help from kids and the grandkids. He says his wish list for me contains nothing in the way of material things, but I sure do wish hard that our folks in Washington, D.C. would get on with figuring out the future of human spaceflight for America.
Amen.
Amen. Hey, we got a phone call, by the way, Rex. Let's see if I can remember how to do this. I didn't actually put it all together. There we go. Rex, are you on the phone with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the program. Rex, you got a question about investment on space. Talk to us.
Yeah, I remember reading or hearing that on the Apollo program, for every dollar spent, you know, the nation got like $1.60, or I don't know, remember the exact figure. But I never heard anything like that on the shuttle program. And then added on to that, for this Orion program, are they starting to see any dividends from that?
Well, Rex, I tell you, you know, that's a tough answer. The $1.60 whatever is certainly a number I've seen. Historically and almost apocryphally, the number is seven. They say that for every dollar spent on space, you get a $7 return. Now, there have been economists and space advocates that have said that number isn't true. It's not that great. And others say you can't quantify it. But to me, there is no doubt that there is obviously a return on your investment. You spend this money on a program that you get back so much more. In so many ways. I mean, even if you spent, let's say you spent $500 million to launch a rocket with a satellite like DirecTV, that company can employ so many people and get so much more revenue back just in renting my own Vikings NFL services each year to pay back for that so easy. And in terms of Orion, and Pat, I don't know if you want to chime in, but in terms of Orion, no, it's too early. We're still investing in that program. I don't think we see a return on that investment for some time to come. And I think it's important to note that return isn't always economic. There's so many other aspects to it.
That's true. And that's a great question, Rex. In fact, the folks at Space Florida are working with our, you know, here's a plug for my employer, but we're working with our partners at the Florida Department of Transportation, and they are in the process of generating a return on investment tool that we can apply to new space projects and actually quantify what kind of returns we're going to be getting out of offering incentives to certain companies the way that we do in the Department of Economic Opportunity here in the state. So hopefully later next spring, we're going to have some kind of mechanism that'll obviously be publicly available that we can apply and give you some hard numbers to show how much these things are worth.
I think the question is so relevant in terms of the government. We're always worried about our investment in our government, but I think it's even more important, Pat, what you guys are working on, because companies do have to determine, can they make a profit? You know, as we turn more and more of our operations over to commercial operators and we say, well, is there a business case for doing all of this work beyond just the government being the customer? That's very relevant. We have to be able to prove that if SpaceX has to be able to prove, Elon Musk has to be able to prove that he's going to invest $2 billion of his company money, he's going to get more back than what he put in as a business case. And so I think as the years continue and we go further down this path of commercial space, we're going to see some of those more hard numbers reflected in the bottom lines and spreadsheets of our companies.
That's correct. That's correct. You're going to see that in a lot of ways, and every company needs to know that. And the time frames that they're looking for returns are generally a lot shorter than what we would usually apply to strictly government programs.
All right. Hey, Rex, what space-related gift do you want to see under your tree this year?
I would love the Lego something for my kids, but anything. We have a space shuttle that we plug into the tree, and it's got Spock, you know, on it, and the voice says Spock the shuttle and Enterprise.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And I love that.
All right, Rex. Hey, thanks for the phone call. Really appreciate you being part of this on the holiday weekend. Good. Thanks, Rex. I appreciate it. That's great. All right. With about 45 seconds to go, we got to talk about Star Trek Christmas ornaments when we come back. We spent so much time gabbing, we didn't even talk about books. So we got a lot more to fit in here. In the remaining time we have together as we hit the halfway point of our program today. We pause now for our five-minute built-in hold. Get you caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. Again, as this college football holiday weekend continues, big games for us here in pro football tomorrow. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB. Stand by, everyone.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Our phone lines and online inbox open for your questions and comments. The phone number is 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@aol.com. On this Thanksgiving Day holiday weekend, when everybody's out and about shopping and getting ready for the holiday to come, getting your gifts for your space-related person in your family. That's what we're going to try to help you with for the remaining time. We've been wanting to get into our favorite lists of books and movies and whatnot. And with me in the studio today, Patrick McCarthy from Space Florida by day, but a fellow space cadet the rest of the time. Pat, again, welcome back.
Thanks.
All right, so we're going to talk here, and in the studio, just hovering here, is my oldest son, Christopher, who's here, a special guest from Nashville. Do you have anything you wanted to say, Toph?
No, I'm good.
Okay, and that was his one and only remark for the entire program. We'll just turn his mic off. All right, space-related books. Let's start with them. Pat McCarthy, what tops your list is the best books you would recommend folks to get?
The ones I love, Last Man on the Moon by Gene Cernan.
Yeah.
It's his autobiographical account of his space exploits.
Not The Last Man, The Most Recent Man.
The title of the book is The Last Man on the Moon, and I pray that doesn't remain true forever.
Yes, for any time soon, right.
Another one is Light This Candle, which is the biography of Alan Shepard. And that's by Neil Thompson.
Yeah.
It's a very good read, goes into a lot of great detail and a lot of interesting stories about Al Shepard that most folks don't know. And I don't think we're in a lot of the other
Now, was that book done after he passed away? Do you know?
Just after he passed away.
Just after, okay. Because it's interesting to see, like, Gene Cernan's book. See, the top of my list, we'll get some more. Pat's brought some books in. We're using them as props. Carrying the Fire by Michael Collins, and I've said this before, and you've got paperback right there. Absolutely, to me, the standard by which all astronaut autobiography books, you know, could be judged. Michael Collins wrote that, at least let's say he had published 5 years after the 1969 moon landing. He probably started writing it, you know, a few months. Who knows when he started writing it? It's very timely, contemporary to that time. All the memories are fresh, opposed to some of the other ones.
Right, and he is probably one of the most candid folks about what it was like to go through, you know, and he's certainly one of the best writers of the astronaut corps. You know, it does not have a ghostwriter or a co-author, so that says a lot. I mean, he's very intelligent, really knows how to turn of phrase.
He's always had that wit about him, and that's continued throughout his whole life. In fact, you know, I've read that book so many times as a kid growing up and in my young adult life, and then as I started reporting at Florida Today, his book and his style of writing continues to be in the back of my head as an inspiration. But, you know, let me ask you real quick. You got the Alan Shepard book, Ghostwritten. First Man, the Neil Armstrong book, also well done, but so overly detailed to me. It was really hard to get through, but still a book you ought to have on your shelf.
Oh, certainly. And it was pretty well written, but like you say, there was an awful lot of stuff in there that tended to bog it down. And, you know, Neil Armstrong was a detail-oriented guy, so maybe right. That's why it came out that way. Through all the interviews and things that he did with the author.
Imagine writing a book about Leif Erikson, Christopher Columbus, Magellan in that same style of detail. So here's this man of history. We know everything there is to know about him at this point, it seems. What else do you got?
How about some fiction? This one's from a couple years ago called Mars Crossing by Jeffrey Landis, L-A-N-D-I-S.
Yeah.
Also a model rocketeer, but he works at, he works at NASA Ames, I think.
Okay.
Several long-range concepts up there. This one's a great book if you want to read about a sort of a low-budget kind of Mars program thing. And you know, that's probably what we're going to see. We're going to make it as inexpensive as possible as the technology develops. But Mars Crossing, it's a very exciting book on how several different countries end up going to Mars. And
this is fiction or
it's fiction, yes.
But science fiction in the sense
it
of
is science
based
fiction,
on.
But he is one of the. He's a premier science fiction author because he's won the Hugo and Nebula Awards, which are the two top awards right. for science fiction writers.
Last week we had on two authors, Brian Nicholas, author of American Missiles, our buddy from college, and then a book called Moon Hoax and by Paul Guillebard. And Moon Hoax, a fiction book setting in a contemporary setting where we race basically the Chinese to the moon. The Chinese say we never went to the moon and we got to prove them wrong. Great book. I want to continue to recommend and also remind you, Space Talk listeners, his deal for us is still out there. You go to moonhoaxbooks.com, moonhoaxbooks.com, moonhoaxbook.com. Buy the book directly from the author. Use the coupon code SPACETALK. You get a first edition autographed book for 40% off the cover price.
Pretty good deal.
Not bad at all. I want to mention Falling to Earth, Al Warden, Apollo 15 astronaut Al Warden, who's also a resident here of Central Florida and a frequent guest on the program. Another outstanding book that he wrote chronicling his tales and great insight into some of the politics. Of course, Apollo 15 got caught up in the big stamp scandal, the postal cover scandal after the flight. They all basically got their hands slapped, but maybe they didn't, and he goes into all that very honestly and sincerely about all that. A great book. There's some fun books that I like to have that are out there that I like to – I love anything Star Trek, any of the Star Trek books, the fiction books. They're good ones. They're bad ones. The Star Trek Technical Manual, an old classic that I love. So you've
still
got
mine, yeah.
You've got some stuff that's kind of quasi-fiction, fantasy, but also real.
Well, that's right. There's one called The Spaceship Handbook by Jack Haggerty, and this one's available from ARA Press. This is a book that touches on every classic science fiction movie and TV show ever made. It's got diagrams of all the vehicles in there. It's got a plot synopsis for everything, and it really is it's very entertaining because of the writing style that Jack and his co-author John Rogers have, and it makes a great gift.
I hear it does make a great gift. Absolutely. Thank you very much for my copy recently.
And it's a huge book.
Yeah, you know, that's what's so surprising. It's like an encyclopedia
so.
Book.
It's like an encyclopedia, and really lists, if you've heard of a science fiction movie or TV show, it's in there.
Yeah, the Starship Enterprise, it's in there. The cool-looking ship, the classic lines of From When Worlds Collide, it's in there. 2001 Space Odyssey.
You know, all the ships from 2001, Discovery, the Lunar Lander, the probes, you know, everything and anything are in there.
That's right. Really cool. And talk about the Model Rocket book, because we want to get a big plug out for Model Rocketry today, too.
Well, and while it's not a toy, it is a great hobby. Model Rocketry, Model Rocket Design and Construction by our friend Tim Van Milligan.
Yeah.
And that's available either on Amazon or from his Apogee Rockets website. This one is great because it goes into detail on everything you want to do or need to know about building model rockets. It goes through all the concepts of stability and all that good stuff that kids can learn just by having fun.
Yeah, I think kids can look at this book and get something. I think parents, especially who want to get their kids involved in model rocketry, it's a great book because there's still that media thing out there, that buzz that model rocketry is dangerous and scary and, you know, you're going to blow your kid's hand up or whatever. And, you know, you just look through some of this stuff and you see that there's a lot of safety here, a lot of science behind it, and a lot of good good practices.
That's right. And, you know, everything from how to get started until you want to build, you know, highly detailed scale models or gliders or some of the more advanced systems, the high-powered rockets and everything. It's all in there, and it's an excellent resource. I still refer to it for a lot of things, and I've been building rockets for 40 years, but there's a lot of things I've learned just by taking a look at that book.
A lot of these books that we're mentioning, especially the ones that I've mentioned, and Pat, I want to include some of your books. I've got a website. There's a link on – if you go to WMMBAM.com, keyword space talk, and see the opening journal entry for today's program, you'll see a link there to my personal website page of space gift ideas. And a lot of these books and movies that we're going to talk about shortly are all listed there with links to where you can pick them up at Amazon. If you go through those links and make a purchase, Milo Solutions Space Talk does get a financial benefit from that, which helps us pay for the program and keep Sean Williams, our board operator, you know, fed anyway between programs, and which is always a good thing. Another book that I want to mention too that's just kind of fun. Well, first of all, I think that the Wernher von Braun book Space Travel is a classic that everyone should have on their shelf. It talks about some of the stuff that he wrote. I mean, he wrote this thing with Frederick Ordway, and just to read, it kind of goes back just early Apollo was the last edition, I think, that came out. A lot of details of the early days of the program, not only historically, but theoretically and conceptually of where we want to go, where we should go. There's all this talk always about where we want to go with our space program, and we need another study or we need another panel to figure it out. In my opinion, I think von Braun and the early German rocket team kind of had it in their heads. You go back to Tsiolkovsky in Russia, Robert Goddard here in America. You put all of their writings to Hermann Oberth, you put all their writings together, and you've got the plan. I don't know what we're waiting for to figure out where we're going to go or how we're going to do it. It's all kind of out there. And the last book I want to mention, Moon Hoax by Shirish Date, a book that I personally appear in. He wrote this book, former Orlando Sentinel space reporter wrote it when he was sailing across the Atlantic.
I think you mean Final Orbit.
Final Orbit. What did I say?
You said Moon Hoax.
Oh, did I say Moon Hoax? I'm looking
Paul's
right at my
book from last week.
Final Orbit. Shirish Date, thanks, Pat. Final Orbit, and a character based on me and a lot of my friends at the time we were working in Florida, they all part of that book. It's available. One copy exists on Amazon right now with a paperback, $29.99 from Great Britain. You can buy it right now on Amazon. A paperback book worth $30. I think Shirish should be proud. Okay, we hear the music. It's time to pause. We're going to come back with our final break, get you caught up on the next launch, wrap up our conversations today. We'll be back in just a few moments. I'm Jim Benke. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
If you missed part of the show, catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
Okay, welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk. Reminding you, you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week. WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, your first stop. We also have a page on Space Talk page on Facebook, and our Twitter account is Space Talking. In terms of the next launch, we don't have much more new to report on that except to say that the Atlas V, United Launch Alliance Atlas V mission of the X-37B Orbital Test Vehicle Mini Space Shuttle, Mini Space Plane, has reserved a date on the Eastern Range of December 11th. However, we've not had any kind of confirmation from the company, the Air Force, yet that they have resolved a problem with an upper stage engine that misfired, had a low pressure reading, had some problems during a Delta IV launch in October. This Atlas V has a very similar engine on its upper stage. They're a version of the RL-10 engine. So as they continue to troubleshoot that issue and deal with the fallout of whatever that may be, They did want to have a launch date to work toward anyway to keep the launch team on a timeline. So December 11th now is the date they've reserved on the range. However, I've yet to talk to anyone who is confident about that date. So we'll just wait and see what happens with that. So, again, we'll keep you up to date on that launch. A bunch of other things going on in space as well. Launches coming up from just about every nation, it seems, that's flying these days, including South Korea, going to make another attempt to get their rocket off the ground this week. You can get up to date on all of those launches. Do jump on the web again, WMMBAM.com, keyword space talk. Look for the link to our launch forecast page, and that'll get you to a collection of websites that have some great updates on launch schedules, including the top one, spaceflightnow.com. Pat McCarthy in the studio with us today. We're talking about space-related gifts in our remaining time together, and we want to talk about movies now. So, big screen, DVDs, Blu-rays, whatever.
Downloads. Whatever those modern kids do these days.
Everything but 16-millimeter film or whatever. What's on your stack? Let's hear real quick what some of your favorites are.
Some of my favorites, When Worlds Collide,
yes.
One of those George Pal classics with the great special effects. Corny, but great special
effects,
but considering
great.
When they were.
Yeah.
War of the Worlds, the original. Not that hokey one with Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
War of the Worlds, the great one with Gene Barry.
Scary to death in the middle of the night, I'll tell you that.
Indeed, it still does.
Yeah.
Destination Moon, another great late 50s classic.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and a lot of stuff. Isn't that the one that the Woody Woodpecker movie is in?
It is. They use that Woody Woodpecker cartoon to explain to the audience and the characters in the movie
right,
who are trying to finance it, but mostly to the audience, how rockets work and why you can go
that's
in space.
That's right.
But you're not pushing against anything. How can it take off? Well, anyway, it's very interesting. There's no propeller. How does it fly?
How does it work?
Woody explains all that for you, so it's great. Another classic, Forbidden Planet, with Walter Pigeon and Leslie Nielsen and the gorgeous Anne Francis. Ultra classic.
Very
good. I've got some cool ones from a friend of ours who does space history movies, Rocket.Aero, A-E-R,
okay.
And the V-2 in America. He's got a whole slew of books about the Bomark, several of the X-planes.
I love the Bomark missile itself. And, of course, that was the one that sat out on the Cape Parkway, I forget what we call it now, but the main drag through Cape Canaveral Air Force Station where you would turn to go off to the Air Museum. We used to have a Bomark out there. And when I was a kid, we used to have that that missile model set that had all the little missiles, the 30 missiles.
1-200 scale.
Yeah, real tiny.
Yeah.
And the Bomark was always particularly cool on there. So anyway, what else do you got? Well, okay, now we're going to match up some here. These are good stuff.
Some that I know you have in your collection, Apollo 13.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong. Tom Hanks knows how to make movies, him and Ron Howard.
Yeah.
And, of course, the whole HBO series From the Earth to the Moon.
Absolutely a must-have. If you do not own From the Earth to the Moon and you are even remotely interested in the space program, or if you're one of these shuttle guys that have been around the whole program of shuttle and don't have a clue, Justin Ray, about what happened before shuttle – From the Earth to the Moon, you've got to pick it up.
And, it's great. They're, about an hour and 10 minutes
Yeah, about
or so
an hour
each.
So each,
It's
yeah.
like a dozen episodes, but some of them are absolutely gorgeous. They're well done. Gives you a real feel for the period, what the people were going through, what they were thinking, how they made things happen back then. Of course, you can't go without the right stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of hokey.
Many ways is it wrong? How many ways is it misleading? But it's still one of the best out there.
And it's got one of the best soundtracks ever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
One that I always like, it's in my top three space movies of all time, is Marooned with Gregory Peck and Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
That's another one, and it's written by...
based on the book by Martin Caden.
Martin Caden, longtime Space Coast resident.
Yep.
And it's great. That's the one where an Apollo crew is trapped in orbit after they... disconnect from their Skylab space station.
I guess he originally wrote that as a Mercury program, and then by the time it finally got published, he had updated to Apollo, and a great movie, some great video in that movie of what the Cape looked like back in, early 70s, I guess it would have been mid-70s, something like that.
Late 60s, early 70s, yep. 2001, A Space Odyssey. No true space movie aficionado is without this movie. Not true. The first 20 minutes are hard to understand, and the last half hour is totally incomprehensible unless you've read the book.
Right.
And even then, I had a hard time figuring
out
what in the world is going on here.
And then the cop out of 2010 when it finally came out afterwards.
Well, but, trying to explain things, which was a cop out. Another fun one from the early 50s, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
Again, not the recreation, for the redo from
the reimagined,
which was totally hokey. The Day the Earth Stood Still. It's got all the great stuff in it. Michael Rennie plays Klaatu, the alien that lands in Washington, D.C., and explains to humanity, we better get our act together or else.
That's right. And I'll add to that only, of course, you know, I love my Star Trek movies. I love the old TV series UFO, the Gerry Anderson UFO series from Great Britain, set in 1981, came out in like the mid-70s.
You got your new Battlestar Galactica.
Got the new Battlestar Galactica there. I want to mention the Disney, Walt Disney Treasures Tin, Walt Disney Tomorrowland. Great. It has all the old Disney, Wernher von Braun, Walt Disney color episodes from Disney, explaining how we're going to go into space, how we're going to go to the moon, how we're going to Mars, plus a lot of other neat things Epcot. And the number one best, we got to wrap it up here, the number one best space movie of all time, can you name it?
The Reluctant Astronaut
well, with Don Knotts.
Thank you, but it's
absolutely
a great,
fun movie. The next day I'm going to fly in space, if ever it happens, the night before I'm watching The Reluctant Astronaut. Of course, a shout out to I Dream a Genie. We lost Larry Hagman, Tony Nelson last night, died of cancer, 81 in Dallas. But I Dream of Genie, also a great series. And what else? So last call.
Oh, all the old Star Trek ones, you know, the original series, Next Generation. Enterprise is still a personal
thing. Still a great. Okay, well, anyway, so there we go. Wrapping it up, your holiday gifts. Go to WMNBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, and to the link to our page to have updates to all of this anyway. Next week, we're going to continue talking about Space Florida, believe it or not. Frank DiBello was going to be on, but we're working on a replacement for him. It will not be Pat. Frank's got to travel, but we will talk about Space Florida next week. That's it for now. Space Talk, a production of Mylas Solutions, brought to you thanks to the help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technologies, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the op station for today's program. Join us next Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard, for another hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now. WMNB presents a weekend edition of the Glenn Beck program. I'm Jim Bankey. We'll talk to you again real soon.